I'm speaking today with Lisa Squires, who is running for the nomination in Congressional District 7 in Harris County. Lisa, first question, why are you running for this office?
Because I think I would be very good at it, and I think that Mr. Culberson is very bad at his job.
All right, well, that's to the point. You ran for CDO 7 in 2010 as a write-in candidate.
Yes.
Tell me what you learned from that experience.
Well, I learned that it's very frustrating to see the filing date go by and have no one have run against any of the incumbents. So what happened last time was no one ran against Ted Poe, Louie Gohmert, Culberson, any of them. And the filing date had passed, so there was nothing to do but, you know, as a protest vote, put myself in as a write-in. So it really was only a partial campaign because I started in July when the write-in period opened. But what I learned was by going to all the meetings and by seeing how things work in the county and seeing how the candidates did their campaigns, I learned how the process works, and then I also learned what doesn't work. I saw people paying consultants. I saw people having assistants and helpers. I saw meetings on one side of town doing one thing and another side of town doing another thing because I was new and I didn't know anybody or anything at all. I had the luxury of seeing all of it as an outsider. And seeing, in my mind, what works and what doesn't work, and seeing that there's a lot of potential in the city and a lot that can be done and that a lot that we can do as individuals. I had perceived that there was some kind of magical Oz kind of thing going on behind the scenes where everything that happens in the city and the county is run by someone and it's all magically attached to strings or something. And I found out that that, in fact, is not true. There's a lot of things that really no one is in charge of, and there's a lot of vacuums and opportunities to step in and be an activist and make a difference.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your background. You know, what do you do, and what's your experience in politics?
I have no experience in politics whatsoever. I'm a native Houstonian who was busy raising my kids. When my kids were small, I decided to get divorced, and I put myself through school. I'm from Galena Park, and no one in my family had ever been to college. So I did my undergrad in accounting, because I already had a bunch of credits in various things, so that went quickly. And then I did an MBA at U of H in the Graduate Entrepreneurship Program. And so those things allowed me to help raise my children and to go out into the business world and be a business consultant, and that taught me what was going on here in the city as far as the oil companies. I had a lot of contracts with oil companies, saw a lot of behind-the-scenes kind of things. And after that, these past few years, now that my kids are in college, I have a lot of free time, and I'm just finding that, like I said, there are opportunities in the city to implement the things that I was already doing on a larger scale.
Okay. And, you know, if you were elected, what would be your top priorities as a member of Congress?
To vote the exact opposite of everything that John Culberson has ever voted on. So I would be increasing our funds for education. I would be increasing the regulations on oil and gas companies and pollution and so forth. I would be an advocate for unions. I would be an advocate for women's rights. I would not take PAC money from corporations and then vote for the things they want, like taking PAC money from Philip Morris and voting that tobacco is not a drug. So I would actually be a voice for the people in Houston and an advocate for people.
What sorts of things would you like to see Congress do to help the economy get moving better?
One thing they tried a few years ago and was stopped was to get rid of payday lending companies. That is a drain on our communities. Here in Texas, we have more payday lending stores than we have Starbucks or McDonald's, and it takes $4 billion in fees from our lowest income families who are in dire straits and need a payday loan, and then they can't pay it off, and it takes all of their spare income to try to catch up with that. That drains the economy. Continuing to give tax breaks and refunds even to corporations. That then makes it where every family in the United States has to pay hundreds of dollars a year extra in taxes, not to just make up for what the corporations didn't pay, but to actually give them a refund. That's just wrong. So things like that, where on the one end the corporations aren't doing what they should, and then on the other end the corporations are taking from the economy. If both of those things were stopped, all of us in the middle would have more, and everyone would do better.
Okay. What is your definition of comprehensive immigration reform?
It would be something like the DREAM Act, If you've been here and you are working and you are not a criminal, then you should have a path to citizenship, something like they proposed in the DREAM Act, where you pay a fine for having entered illegally, you pay any maybe back taxes that you owe, and then you just go on with your working and paying taxes and being a citizen, and you have a chance to take the test and go through the citizenship process, especially for the children. Then also stronger border control and indicating to people that it's not they should not keep trying to come in, that we don't have jobs or space for them, but certainly not splitting up families. People that are already here, their families should be allowed to stay together. We need the workers. They're already citizens. The children are already citizens. So if we had border control and we had assimilation process for the people that are here, and then we had a visa process for the workers and to allow people in a little at a time rather than making it impossible. Because right now there's no way to actually come here legally, hardly. So it should be, we should have a process where you can come here legally and join your family or get a job. And not just from Mexico, I think, which is what people's interpretation of immigration is, but from everywhere, because they all matter. All of the immigrants that are coming from everywhere matter to contribute to our society and our melting pot.
Okay. As you know, there was recently a big controversy regarding some new rules proposed by the Obama administration that govern what insurance companies must provide in terms of birth control coverage, mm-hmm. to provide that, with no copay.
Sure.
There was an exemption proposed for religious institutions that has engendered some controversy. What is your opinion on the compromise plan that the Obama administration came up with for that?
I think it's a perfectly good plan. Every woman has 500 menstrual cycles, and I can't have 500 babies. No one can. So every woman on the planet is practicing family planning and birth control of some sort. To deny that is to deny the biology of what's going on. So I grew up myself as a Baptist. We were not allowed to drink or smoke or dance. That would tell me that, for example, my employer could then choose to say that, well, we're a Baptist employer, and therefore we won't have any arts programs or fund them in any way because that's about dancing, or that's about smoking, or that's about... So getting into religious freedom and politics and mixing those things together is a bad thing. When we mix religion and politics, we tend to do things like burn people at the stake. So I am not a fan of that. And so I think Obama did a good thing. Obviously, all women need reproductive care. It's a hypocrisy and a travesty to give men free prescriptions to Viagra, but not give women any prescriptions to stop the resulting pregnancies. So Romania attempted to make their population have more children, and it ended in complete disaster. I think we're still adopting the Romanian babies that were left behind. And so, no, I'm not... I'm not at all a fan of the war on women that's going on right now.
Okay. Do you favor or oppose giving a permit to the Keystone XL pipeline?
There's already a Keystone pipeline. This is just a larger one. We're already shipping those tar sands, that bitumen stuff, in a pipeline from Canada to here. It just is sludge, and so it has to keep on being reheated and sent further. They just want to build a bigger pipeline to send more of that bitumen sludge stuff to be made into diesel. It can only be made into diesel or asphalt. It won't ever be made into regular gasoline. And who intends to buy it is the French and the Europeans, because they need more diesel. So if we want to, I guess, invest in oil companies and buy stock from them, then when they complete these transactions and sell this diesel to the French, then maybe we would benefit. But given that 99.9% of us don't own any stock in these oil companies, I don't perceive how it benefits us in any way, shape, or form, except that we do get to then produce more things at our refineries here in Houston. Unfortunately, as a byproduct of processing this sludge from Canada, we will have a huge leftover pile of coke that has to then be tended to and shipped out somewhere, and it requires massive amounts of water. And a new facility is trying to be built, I believe, in Matagorda to process all this. So to me, it's all corporations. It's all money trading hands. It's a lot of eminent domain. We already have a family here in Texas that may lose their family farm, just one that we know a lot about, but there's many more. So I think it's another example of corporate greed and overreach, and I think there's other ways to go about things.
Okay. You have, in the last year, spent a lot of time and are tracking what's going on with groups like the King Street Patriots. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that. What are you seeing? What are you doing?
From the day they opened, I go incognito to the King Street Patriots meetings here in Houston. I've met all the big hotshots that are there, including the governor and Culberson and so forth.
Just let me interrupt to say, what is the purpose of that group? Talk about that a little bit as well.
They're very clearly attempting to take over politics here in Harris County, and I feel like that they use us as a template for the rest of the country. They have their group meeting here in a few weeks. It's their national summit. They use dirty, underhanded tactics. They openly lie in their meetings. I've heard Governor Perry, Dan Patrick, and other people tell blatant untruths in the meetings.
About?
Dan Patrick told the whole crowd that the nursing homes were fully funded, at which point the crowd cheered and yelled and clapped. And then he told them that the schools were fully funded and not to be worried. Those things simply aren't true. So they get up there and they say their talking points and they don't bother to fill out the facts or the details. But what I see them doing is they're real big on what they call true the vote, what they call the integrity of the vote. But to them, integrity means that only they get to vote. To me, integrity would be 100% voter turnout and 100% counting of ballots. Their interpretation of integrity is to take away as many ballots and voters as they can to only get what they want. So Catherine Engelbright goes there. I've seen her there. They're bringing their True the Vote Summit there. And I think that they use Texas as a proving ground or a stomping ground for seeing what they can get away with, attacking women's rights, attacking voting rights, attacking unions. And all that stuff comes on their emails every week.
Is there something in terms of voting rights that you would like to do as a member of Congress? What would you do as a member of Congress to address some of the things that they're doing?
I would have 100% voter registration and 100% voter turnout. I would just make that a normal civic duty. I would make it lifetime voter registration and stop the purging of the voter base and so forth that we have so much going on here. I'm not sure, to be honest, what I could affect from the federal level, but whatever could be done, that would be my goal. That I would, if it couldn't be done from federal legislation, then when I'm here, I would work with local officials and, you know, citizens to make such things happen.
As we talk today, it's only been a little while since the San Antonio court drew the current interim map. I say current because there's still... You never, my way of looking at it, until we actually start voting, you just never know what might happen. What is your opinion of the interim maps that the San Antonio court has drawn for the May 29th primary and November general election?
Well, again, I mean, I think a lot of it's clearly gerrymandered. I'm glad for, like, Senator Davis that she was able to save her district, but it's sad that for Austin that the gentleman there, Lloyd Doggett, is going to, you know, there's no way for him to have a district now. I think for Harris County, they have, you know, I mean, you see what they did to Ted Poe's district. They drug it from Lake Houston around down in through and gave him all of Memorial and Spring Branch and Montrose and down into the inside the loop. I mean, it's just... and then to chop big sections out of, you know, Culberson's Congressional District 7 and send it further out into Katy. You know, we lost our candidate to run against McCall because of how badly it was drawn. It runs from Katy to Austin. So he withdrew from that race. So we have no one to run against McCall, and we have no one to run against Poe. And it's because, I think, of the way they're drawn.
And, you know, District 7 was, I mean, it was a Republican district last decade. It's drawn to be a Republican district this decade. Right. How do you plan to be competitive in a district like that?
The thing is that the districts all have about 750,000 people in them. And if you look back in the races, the most that ever votes when you combine what Culberson gets and his opponent gets, when we had Skelly or Martinez or Henley running against them, that never totals more than 250 or 275,000 votes. He gets 150 and they get 120 or something like that. So who are the rest of those people? That's what I say. As a native Houstonian, I know, and you know from driving around, every time you cross another half mile or another two blocks, you're in a different kind of neighborhood. So with a big chunk of land like that that has 750,000 people in it and only 250,000 even vote at all, I know that every corner has an apartment complex on it. I know that every time you drive a few blocks, you're around different kinds of people. And the fact is that they just aren't registered and they just don't vote. And yet if you reach out to them, they will. So we know that it's movers that don't vote, and we know that as much as 50% of Harris County moves every year to a new apartment. And if you'll go to the apartments and reach out to people, you can get more voters. And I have a different perspective for Congressional District 7 in that, as a woman, and able to reach out to moms and people who have children in the schools and so forth, I have a different base of people who will vote for me than would have ever considered Mr. Culberson.
If you were to win the nomination and President Obama were to call you up and say, Lisa, I'd like to come into District 7 and help you campaign.
Right.
What sort of topic or issue or whatever would you like to hear the president address in District 7?
The one thing to me that the way all of this goes together that I think that we all know we need to stop is we don't educate our children and we send them into prison where we then have to pay more for them to live in prison and they don't pay taxes and we drive down the market. We have a vicious cycle going on where we're dumbing down our electorate, our workforce, our communities. And we could stop that and build an infrastructure and jobs for everyone rather than incarcerating them and paying for that. So to me, it's all one big picture and one whole thing that goes together, where if we could come together as citizens and make a logical decision to plan for the future and stop the destructive things that we do right now, we need better schools, no private prisons, less incarceration of youth, more training programs, more union training of skilled jobs in the community. And really within just 10 or 12 years, you could have a complete change in your economy where you would have parks and libraries and funds and happy people. Right now, we're beating ourselves up with bad legislation and bad trends and bad decisions. And I think Obama understands that. And I think that as a man of color, he could speak to the community for that. And that as an educated man, he could speak to why it's important to be educated and bringing all that together and stop the pattern that we have now.
Representative Culberson is known, among other things, for his work to try to prevent the university's light rail line from being built, at least in its current configuration.
Right.
As we speak, the Congress is trying to work on a new transportation bill. I'm not really sure how to phrase a specific question out of this. So let me just ask you generally, what's your view on transportation policy? And as a congressperson for District 7, what would you work on?
Mr. Culberson doesn't mind doing the Trans-Texas Corridor, though, and taking people's land and having a foreign company own a toll road that then we have to pay. So, and he didn't mind at all taking PAC money from the Brace PAC, which is Bracewell Giuliani, which set up the whole thing. So I think that if it's a local thing that maybe benefits local people, that Mr. Culberson doesn't see any benefit in it. But if it's something corporate-based that will profit him, you know, he's all for it. So for me, myself, I do think that we need some kind of rail. I do think that it's important that we not cut the bus lines, that people need the bus lines. I think it's important that we have a comprehensive transportation approach that's long-term. We can't stay, obviously, with, you know, oil and gas-based vehicles. We've got to have long... It's the same as what I was just saying about school and education. All these things are one big picture, and if you have to address it comprehensively, just like immigration. So we need a comprehensive transportation approach, and it shouldn't involve foreign companies and toll roads.
As we speak today, it's still a day before the refiling deadline, so there are two other candidates currently in the race for the Democratic nomination of District 7.
Right.
When people go to vote, why should they vote for you to be the nominee and not one of your opponents?
I'm the only person in the race who is a native Houstonian with children in the public schools, who has family and union members here in the community, who's an active person in the community, and who does not have business ties with Republicans. Unfortunately, although I do appreciate both of my opponents' efforts to represent our city, they both have very strong ties with very questionable Republican operatives here in town and or business contacts that are not in any way conducive to representing the city of Houston. They both strictly have government and oil and gas interests in their business life and their personal lives, as far as I can see. So I don't think that's what we need. I think we already have that in Mr. Culberson. We already have an attorney who doesn't spend any of his time here or know anything about the area, who is strictly focused on benefiting corporations and specifically often oil and gas. And unfortunately, both of my opponents kind of are duplicates of that. So I am a local person with local interests, with children in the schools. I went to school here. My mother went to school here. My family are union members here, including HPD and Houston Fire. And I actually understand what's going on here, and I have no corporate ties, and I have no business ties to anything oil and gas of any sort. And I would actually represent the people, which would be kind of unique after all these years of putting up with people like Mr. Culberson.
All right. Lisa Squires, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.